Let's sing and swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 19, Gaining and Losing Ground. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
Lieutenant Mukibo is back in Japan, being court-martialed for looting and his conduct in Baguio.
Mr. Matsumoto told me Walter's still on the vow. Said he saw him 2 weeks ago looking fat and well.
Nita sent 100 pesos. Her family and my grandfather's legacy by check on the bank at home are keeping us going during inflation and concentration.
And now, Episode 19.
October 18, 1943. Jerry met me at the hospital, all excited and holding an envelope. Oh my God, what is it?
I think you're gonna have to sit down, Natalie. I'm not sure if your heart can take it.
What is it?
Just open the envelope.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, I nearly fell over when Dr. Schaefer handed it to me.
500 pesos.
Yeah, from Nita. Read the note.
It says, 500 peso loan from Nita for the Crowders. Oh, she must know about the shortages in here.
You know what? I'm gonna cook a dinner for Nita.
She'd get a kick out of that, Jerry.
Boy, I don't know which is better, this or the news.
Are you sure it's true?
Yep, it's an honest-to-God authentic. They've taken a big airfield in Celebes, so the U.S. can finally start taking back Davao and Mindanao. And there have been 5 landings in Borneo.
No wonder the guards are jittery.
They sure are. Arthur told me what's been going on in Baguio.
Hello?
Hello, Auntie. Dinispatcha mo na ba yung radyo mo? Did you get rid of your radio?
Bakit ko naman gagawin yun? Why should I?
Didn't you hear? We're supposed to hand them in.
No.
Oh, Auntie. The Japanese are giving us until the end of the month to turn in our radios. Or they'll put us in jail.
Then I'll give mine to Ismael for the resistance. Maybe already then.
No, Auntie. Just turn it in. The Japanese are going crazy. They think everyone's a guerrilla.
Okay.
Good. And don't let them see smoke coming out of your chimney.
Why?
Because the Japanese will think you're cooking food. They've been raiding people's houses. You don't want soldiers snooping around and taking your food. Or worse.
How am I going to cook? Okay, I won't.
Good.
Did the Crowthers get their money?
I think they did. I hope they can get food for BD. Mr. Hanselma says he's so thin.
Oh, our poor little BD.
For several days, the kitchen has served first-class pure white rice. It seems our regular supplier had no rice, so we had to take from the general's cache. Thus, we know why it takes a crew of 51 to pick over and clean the third and fourth class rice we've eaten for the past 2 years. Despite the first class rice, parties, and the newly distributed cache, we are all losing ground with our health. Even the elites, which is a mystery to me. Why does Wanda Gallagher have the same acid and cankers in the mouth as me when she eats everything money can buy? Her family have all had acute dysentery. Some have lost much weight and been in the hospital a number of times, yet I have kept comparatively well.
Camp Holmes Daily News. The executive committee reports that unless additional relief funds are received, the present supply of drugs is all that we can plan on for the duration. Because there may be no more pharmaceutical supplies available here or in Baguio, please do not request medicines that you can do without, as you may be depriving people seriously in need of those drugs. Those who regularly take certain medicines might wisely arrange through the camp store to purchase a supply for their future use.
October 20, 1943. Jerry dreamt he was dying and gasping out to Beatty that he must try to complete everything he starts and not leave things unfinished. November 2, 1943. Roxy went to the hospital on a stretcher with a rapid heart. There are now quite a few heart cases. A number of people with bad chronic colitis and a good many suffering from beriberi with swollen legs, eyes, and ankles. Nora, who has flu and high fever, passed out cold in the aisle after a long trip down to the bathroom, which is a tough jaunt when one is sick. November 3, 1943. Jerry is reading up on pellagra and talking with the doctors about the similarity of our diet to what was fed to those who wound up with sore tongue and mouth, aching hands and arms, and upset stomachs. Many suffer from borderline cases of scurvy, sprue, pellagra, and beriberi, all from vitamin deficiencies. I tire easily, so Jerry ordered liver for me. He and Dr. Skirl are going to make calcium from lime and vinegar, or maybe from rocks or eggshells. November 4, 1943. A beautiful golden day. I took materials up to Kathy for her to make a lemon pie. She earns a little cash this way. Then I made lemonade and toast for Beatty and me. We are on a citrus campaign to fend off pellagra, which Jerry is sure we verge on. I have a thoroughly sore tongue again and a fine cough. November 5, 1943. I have to laugh at the marital follies around here. The other day, I heard a conversation in the women's kitchen.
That's it! I am no longer cooking for love!
What's he done now?
When I said I couldn't cook him pancakes, my darling husband asked for our frying pan and had another woman make them. If that isn't grounds for divorce, I don't know what is. The nerve of him and that woman.
Don't get your curlers wound too tight. She cooked pancakes for him all right, and spilled them on the ground in front of him.
Really? Well, good.
He'll be back asking at supper.
Well, he can beg all he wants, but I'm not going to stand around waiting for hours to use the women's stove just to cook for that knucklehead. Where is the incentive?
Living here has certainly reinforced that economic mating is not enough. There must be some love, interest, and companionship behind it. Believe it or not, Jerry found out from the camp news that he has something in common with one of the Imperial Army generals.
Well, what do you know?
What is it, Dad?
Well, according to the camp news, the Japanese commander of the Philippines and I were in Russia at the same time.
Really?
Here, read this.
Lieutenant General Shigemura, commander of the Imperial Japanese Army in the Philippines, was born in Fukuoka Prefect, Japan. He graduated from the Military Academy and Military Staff College, took part in the Siberian expedition and studied in England in 1922.
He was in Siberia when I was. What are the odds?
When were you there?
Right after WW1. Was in the Siberian expedition too, but with the American army. Believe it or not, son, we were allies with Japan in World War I.
November 6, 1943. I'm still feeling weak. My mouth, tongue, and throat are sore all the time, and my teeth feel acid. Frankly, I haven't felt so nearly sunk since Camp John Hay. So Jerry bought 8 ampules of calcium and glucose for me to take each week. It cost 20 pesos, but it's better to take it this way than by eggshell or rock. Intravenous won't be pleasant, but life doesn't hold easiness or pleasure these years, except for sun and scenery. Arthur isn't doing much better. He and Enid talked with us over coffee, and he looks run down. His eyes took on a wild look when he talked about what happened to his house.
Lieutenant Makibo promised to keep our house safe. You know, I thought we were all set, you know. Because I'd employed Japanese before the war.
I know you did, Arthur. That's why Nakamura made you the first camp liaison.
Arthur did more than that, Jerry. He made sure the Japanese were fed when they were interned at Camp Hay. The Filipinos just left them there.
Lieutenant Makibo promised they'd leave our house alone and let our housekeeper stay. Felt a lot of good that was.
So I take it they got your house too, huh?
Yes.
They ransacked it and sent our Filipino girls away.
Even burned some of our belongings.
And the leaders in charge of the dirty business were Arthur's so-called friends.
Everything the Japanese do is for spite. You know that night Richie and I were jailed in town? They made us watch while they beat this poor Igorov fellow and threw him down the stairs. It would have been better to be beaten than to watch it.
Of course, the Japanese knew that.
All of it, Jerry. The torture, my house. All of it was directed at me. Any possession or goodwill I ever had with them is gone. If I ever had it in the first place.
November 7, 1943. Betty saw Nida downtown in Baguio and got a brief chance to talk with her.
Natalie will be very pleased to hear you're looking so well, Nida. She talks about you all the time.
How are the Grouters?
Oh, as well as can be expected. They've all lost weight and, you know, Natalie didn't have an ounce to lose.
Do they get my food?
Every package. You're keeping them alive, my dear.
Are they getting the money I've sent?
Yes, and all of it has gone for food. Mostly eggs for Beedy.
Oh, my Beedy. I miss him.
He's got a girlfriend.
Oh no, he can't grow up on me.
And June has a young man. Several, actually.
Aw, Junie. I wish I could see them both.
Nida, I know Natalie is going to ask me about their house.
It was awful. All Ismael could do was watch the Japanese load everything onto their trucks.
Well, what could he have done?
Tell Mrs. Crowther that they missed the willowware and their cocktail glasses.
I'm sure she'll be glad to hear that.
One of the drivers was an American soldier. He begged Ismael to give him magazines and books for the GI prisoners at Camp Hay. So Ismael gave him all of the Crowthers' magazines and a lot of their books. I hope Mrs. Crowther won't mind.
Actually, I think she'll be very pleased he did that, Nida.
Camp Holmes Daily News. Dr. Esquivel presented camp with a small supply of medicines, gauze, and thermometers. He also gave us 10 bottles of vaccines, and as only 2 additional are needed to complete the series of shots, the doctors will start injections at once. Incoming internees will be now isolated at the hospital for a period of 2 weeks.
November 8, 1943. Three generals of varying ranks visited camp today. At noon, Carl, Walter, Miss McKim, and some Japanese officers assembled near the guardhouse as five shiny cars drove into camp with the generals. Jerry talked with Carl and Miss McKim afterward.
Well, how's the dog and pony show, Carl?
Not too bad. Don't you think, Miss McKim?
The generals were very respectful.
Yeah, I was sure surprised when they said they wouldn't embarrass us by going through our barracks.
Why the courtesy all of a sudden?
I think they're worried about how prisoners are being treated.
And I got another shocker for you. They even asked why our families weren't living together.
One of the generals is the highest in command on the islands, so he can do something about it.
I tried to stay away from those two intelligence guys.
Why do they always cart them along to these things?
I guess they don't want to miss any opportunity to snoop around. One of them interrogated me way back when.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Bet you gave him a wide berth.
I sure did.
The generals were quite open to talking about many subjects. Don't you think, Carl?
Yeah.
Lieutenant Kido was there too, though I don't know why.
He's sure been moping around lately. What's with him?
Oh, the usual. Just homesick and lonely. He's been hanging around the women's stove watching us cook. Hazel took pity on him and gave him some cookies the other day.
Yeah, they've all been more miserable than usual. Even that new sergeant's been looking pretty hangdog.
He needed to lose some of that swagger. We call him the Big Ape over at the women's barracks.
He told me that he has five children at home.
All of the guards are worried about what's going to happen to them.
I'd be worried too.
Hey, did the general say anything about the relief ship in Manila?
No, but we made it known that we're expecting to get letters and packages this Christmas.
I don't think they can pull the wool over our eyes like last year, one of the generals said. They've assigned an officer to make sure that we are not forgotten this year.
Huh. What's this guy's story?
The only information I got was his name, Major Tomibe.
I'll try to find out more about him. The generals are taking me to Manila with them in a few days to inspect internment camps down there, most likely Santo Tomas and Los Baños.
Wow, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it usually does.
November 10, 1943. I rushed about making peanut butter cookies to get some protein into Beatty. Baking periods only last 15 minutes per person, so all had to be ready at the right time. Now that we have the vote, women are carrying whole or part responsibility for five departments: medical, sanitation, children, clothing, and food preparation. But with our newly found power comes managerial headaches, Camp Holmes style.
Camp Holmes Daily News. The Women's Committee is astonished that rice pickers are attempting to read while removing rocks, weevils, straw, and so forth. The ladies let it be known, they don't think the two occupations can be combined.
November 12, 1943. Fresh milk from town has stopped. The Manila Tribune reports gas and tire shortages. As a result, people are moving closer to their jobs and causing a housing shortage. There's also a coal strike, and people are eating horse meat. November 16, 1943. Rice rationing is stricter than ever. There's no sugar, so yeast is about to stop, which means no vitamin B. Swollen legs and wrists, numb hands, dizziness, lassitude at unexpected moments. These are the order of the day for many. If we could lie around, we could face it better, but many, Jerry included, have to do hard physical work and spells of feeling all gone hit at various times. Liver is now $5 a kilo. November 17, 1943. June went to Baguio this afternoon to get new glasses. She was thrilled, as this was her first car ride in 24 months. But she got carsick and returned feeling tired and homesick.
November 19, 1943. There is no sweet in the children's juice, and it is so sour. Today was the lowest calorie day of the year. Everything is tight, and even drinking water must be hoarded from now on. We were lucky to get rain so late, but doctors are starting to worry once again about dysentery. November 22, 1943. I've had three low days, and no time or energy to write, but will try to piece out what Carl told everyone about his camp inspection trip to Manila.
Shut up! Come on, Carl. Spill the beans.
What do you want to know?
Come on, anything, man. You were gone almost 2 weeks, hobnobbing around with generals.
Okay, well, the first stop was Los Baños. The colonel who runs the camp there said it can house 7,000. But boy, the general sure set him straight. He said it couldn't hold more than 1,000 and was unfit for living.
A Japanese general said that?
Yeah, he seems like a reasonable guy. He wants to condemn it.
Then why doesn't he condemn Camp Holmes?
I know it's hard to believe, but we're better off here. For one thing, they don't have any plumbing or sanitation.
Well, neither do we.
Compared to them, we do.
I heard that families are allowed to live together. Is that true?
Yes, and the general says we can do the same.
Are you going to let spouses living in other camps reunite?
Yes, but they say Los Baños is too crowded, so it's likely they'll move more people up here. They talked about 9 going up here and 6 going down there.
What about Santo Tomas?
I think it includes Santo Tomas.
That's only 15 people.
But it's a start. Boy, I'm telling you, Santo Tomas was like a city.
Was the food any better?
Nah, actually it's better up here. But kids under 15 get a glass of milk and an egg at supper.
That'd make a whale of difference for June and Petey.
It sure would.
You know, frankly, I'm glad to be back. The people in these camps are on their own for everything, but we pitch in and help each other. As much as we all like to gripe around here, I think we've got a better system. We're a lot more democratic in our camp.
Bet the general wasn't eating internee food.
Did you get some good chow?
Yeah, I had a couple of steaks with him.
What about mail from home? Is it still sitting out in Manila Harbor?
No, they unloaded 40 tons of private mail and packages. And get this, there are nearly 12,000 cases of Red Cross Christmas kits.
Praise the Lord. Well, when are we going to get them?
They didn't say.
Bet it all gets stolen like last year.
Well, no, maybe not. The cases were moved to a warehouse that was sealed by the Swiss consul.
You don't think any of it got there?
Well, for what it's worth, the general swore that the cases were guarded from the pier to a warehouse.
How long before they're stolen and sold off?
Well, it's supposedly being guarded by the Japanese.
That's letting the fox guard the hen house.
I don't think so. It was pretty clear that the Japanese are worried about how they're treating prisoners. At least the civilians.
That's because we'll be out of here in 44, and they'll be behind bars.
I don't know about that, but we're definitely gaining ground, and it's starting to show. When the general left camp today, he shook hands and saluted every American. Since when has that happened? And what did he say to you, Miss McKim?
The general asked me to tell you all goodbye and to take care of yourselves.
Did you tell him not to let the door hit him where the good Lord split him on the way out?
Don't talk to Miss McKim like that.
All right, you guys, settle down, because I saved the best news for last. The general let me see inside some of the Red Cross Christmas kits.
Oh, what's in them?
Yeah, what's in them?
Food. You know, butter, powdered milk, Spam, cheese, even Chesterfield cigarettes. And some of the boxes had medical supplies. There was even clothing and recreational stuff.
Yeah? Okay, so when are we supposed to get all these goodies?
They didn't say.
Hold
on, guys. There's been too much publicity about the supply ship for us to not get something. And get this, the generals talked about trading supplies between camps.
Didn't the general say that couples can now get permission from Tokyo to get married?
Yes, and the general's assigned an officer who's going to see that we get our Red Cross kits.
Perfect! Is he Lieutenant Makibo's brother-in-law?
No, his name is Major Tomibe.
The reason I'm so wrung out is my vitamin shot. I started out feeling the usual instant warmth all over, and then bitter mouth and throat. I concentrated my gaze as the doctor pushed it all in and checked my pulse, but then the grass beyond the window, the desk, everything went white. Pure white, and all I could see were outlines. I mentioned this, and the nurse gave me a glass of water with ammonia spirits. My whole system felt out of control, a most hideous feeling when one is hanging on to the thread of consciousness. Then a horrible, sweet, and sickening nausea came over me, and I was escorted to my dorm space. When the doctor came to see me later, I asked him what in the world happened. He said he was afraid that the blood in the syringe would coagulate, so he gave the injection a little faster, not as slowly as usual, and I couldn't absorb it. I hope I never have to repeat such an experience. November 23, 1943. Despite food shortages, Jerry's culinary experiments continue.
Try this, guys.
What is it, Daddy?
My third attempt at bread. Actually, it's cake. I figure if we can't have bread, then let us eat cake.
It's good, Dad.
It is. Did you use the women's stove?
Yeah, I had to wait until 9:30 last night to bake one loaf of cake.
November 25th, 1943. All four of us waited for the truck to come in from Baguio and came back with a wonderful Thanksgiving bag from Nita, which touched us deeply. She sent chicken salad, the bowl covered with fresh young lettuce and scarlet radishes with green leaves, new potatoes, peas, diced carrots, and celery, all made carefully, like our salads of old. She packed half a jar of mayonnaise made from olive oil. As Beatty dove into it, he remarked,
"So this is what chicken tastes like."
Also in the bag were 6 oranges, a half kilo of sugar, and a real pound cake. Daphne and her crew decorated the dining hall for the children's Thanksgiving at 4. At one end of the room was a fireplace made of tin painted red, with a huge log carved in beautiful old lettering that read, "Learn to labor and to wait." In the evening, the dining hall was jammed. We sat down to hamburgers from one of our own pigs mixed with beef, peas, gravy, and mashed potatoes, which I've been dreaming about.
Oh boy. I think the coconut milk in the potatoes has gone sour.
I don't care. I've been looking forward to real mashed potatoes all day.
I'll take it if you don't want it, Dad.
Pass your plate over and I'll give you some.
That was such a nice speech Miss McKim gave, thanking the kitchen. Did you see Alex smiling in the corner?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him smile. I heard he's going to send a pie and a big pan of cookies to those 12 American soldiers at Camp A. It's a miracle Alex was able to make them this year with all the shortages.
There you are, June.
You're late. What's up?
Nothing.
Boy troubles again?
Billy said that if I don't believe in Christ, that I have nothing to live for.
You know the saying about religion and politics, June.
I know, Mom. I didn't even bring it up. All I said was I didn't want to talk about it with him. And anyway, I think I have a right to my own beliefs.
You sure do, honorable daughter.
Well, I'm sure you two will patch things up.
Maybe. Dad?
Son?
If the GIs are getting pumpkin pie, does that mean we do too?
June and I went to Union Church service at 10, which was held inside because of gentle rain. Patton's sermon was fine, taking the place of Collier, who's in the hospital. There are few patients there because of the lull in dysentery, for which the pastor said we can be thankful. November 27, 1943. The men's committee received an additional 4,000 pesos in relief funds, but bananas have become scarcer due to rice shortages and natives eating them instead. They're now going for 5 cents each. If we only spent money on bananas, the 4,000 pesos would give each of us in camp one banana a day for 5 months, if they don't go up in price, and we can get them. November 28, 1943. Here we go again. 3 people have dysentery with high fevers. One had a heart attack from the severity of it. When I took Beattie's specimen to the lab today, Dr. Viola asked me to sit down.
Thanks for waiting, Mrs. Crowder. I just viewed a slide, and Beattie's got dysentery.
Okay.
I'm terribly sorry.
I thought he'd just eaten some bad food.
You know, with the food shortages, it's just as likely he could have had food poisoning from spoiled meat. But he doesn't.
We thought Beattie was starting to gain some ground with his health.
We're going to have to quarantine him.
I know.
Well, bring Beattie down in 15 minutes, and we'll have a space ready for him.
When I took Beattie's soap and towel down to him at the hospital, he turned his face to the wall and wept. I couldn't comfort him physically without being contaminated. But I soon had him smiling, and he was later cheered by his girlfriend and her friend calling from below the window. Dr. Viola is upset and worried. Some of the older people are failing visibly, and with the new water restrictions, the flies have started again. November 29, 1943. The Igorots report great suffering outside from scarcity, privation, and hardship. The Igorot women here age young and have internal troubles. A few days ago, a newborn baby was brought in by neighbors. They wanted hospital treatment for the infant. One of the women lost her infant last year and now has another one living this time. November 30, 1943. Jerry and I were studying Spanish and Japanese when Peg ran in to tell us the long-awaited news.
Walter's being transferred to Manila.
Oh, that's wonderful, Peg.
Great news. Here, have some cake bread.
Thanks, Jerry. I'm so excited I could just bust. I finally get to see my husband. Gee, I hope Walter gets my letter before he leaves Davao.
Think he knows about the prisoner swaps?
No, that's why I wrote to him.
We're keeping fingers and toes crossed for you, Peg. I'm worried. Peg has been wearing herself out lately. She refuses to face the fact that we must cut down on firewood consumption, and puts it off still further by volunteering for crew members who can no longer work full-time because they don't get enough food. Controlled economy comes hard, and people fight against it, twisting and turning anything but face it. December 1, 1943. There is nothing left in the camp store. Everything was bought out today. I suppose it came as no shock that the medical committee accepted Dr. Viola's resignation so he can move to Los Baños. Maybe Peg's husband is there from Davao and they can switch places. December 2nd, 1943. Eloise gave birth to a 6.5-pound girl who was born outside, but manufactured in camp. Although she's married, it's being treated like a scandal. But we hear not as mad as internment camps in Manila, where fathers of newborns are jailed for 6 weeks in what the Japanese call affection tents. What a time to have a baby and be proud of the fact. It's the last thing I would want now. No wonder the mother was jolly and rotund, waddling about. When she went to the hospital, it was said to be dysentery. One asks, what will they do with the specimen? And the reply is, put it in the silver drawer, like they did with little John Hay, who was our first baby born in concentration. Jerry says the newborn is not illegitimate, but illicit. And the proud father is strutting around telling people,
wouldn't you like to know how we manage it? I've told you we can make anything at the shop, and now I've proven it.
This concludes episode 19. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.